Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 442, the continuation of World War II, being recorded on January 18th of the year 2004. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs. More recent programs are streaming on Real Audio at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL, linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Spitfire website is www.spitfirelist.com. And within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast, there will be an article-length detailed description of For the Record program 442 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Spitfire can be reached by email at mail@spitfirelist.com, by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, two words, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. They stock all of the various lectures and programs I've done over the years, and I do not get money from the arrangement with Spitfire. Now, as I mentioned at the conclusion of Side 2, I believe that there is a struggle going on within the United States between sincerely patriotic and sort of good management-oriented elements and an underground Reich-connected, globalist, multinational corporate element that is literally looking to subjugate or, if need be, destroy the United States in the interest of removing it as an obstacle to world fascism. And there are elements of this country that are an obstacle to world fascism. I believe that the Cold War was structured with the underground Reich working on both sides, was planned to work out very much for the United States as the Peloponnesian War worked out for Greece. The end effect was that the steps taken by Athens, the world's first democracy, in order to combat Sparta, ultimately wound up subverting Athens from within, both politically. Athenian democracy was devastated, and economically. And ultimately, when Sparta allied with Persia in order to defeat Athens, it resulted in the subjugation of the Hellenic states and the disappearance of Greece. And I believe the underground Reich, having read their history, as well as their Sun Tzu, their Machiavelli, their Karl von Clausewitz, planned much of what was going to take place. And I believe that barring a reversal in the current state of affairs in the world and the United States, this will be the end of the United States, and we will see the triumph of Hitler. There is, however, a counterattack underway, in my opinion. I think there's a struggle going on between sincerely patriotic and democratic, with a small D, elements. One element of this struggle, I believe, surfaced this past week in a report that was put together for the Army War College. San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, January 12th of 2004, has the following article by Thomas E. Ricks of the Washington Post. It's headlined, Army War College Report Critical of Bush Foreign Policy. A scathing new report published by the Army War College broadly criticizes the Bush administration's handling of the war on terrorism, accusing it of taking a detour into an unnecessary, unquote, war in Iraq, and pursuing an unrealistic, unquote, quest against terrorism that may lead to U.S. wars with states that pose no serious threat. The report, by visiting U.S. Professor Jeffrey Record, who is on the faculty of the Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, warns that as a result of those mistakes, the Army is, quote, near the breaking point, unquote. It recommends, among other things, scaling back the scope of the global war on terrorism, unquote, and instead focusing on the narrower threat posed by the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. The global war on terrorism, as currently defined and waged, is dangerously indiscriminate, and ambitiously and accordingly its parameters should be readjusted, unquote, Record writes. The anti-terrorism campaign, quote, is strategically unfocused, promises more than it can deliver, and threatens to dissipate U.S. military resources in an endless and hopeless search for absolute security, he said, and again skipping down. Publication of the essay was approved by the Army War College's Commandant, Major General David Huntoon, Lovelace said. He said he and Hantoon Lovelace, by the way, is Army Colonel Douglas Lovelace, the director of the Strategic Studies Institute. Beginning again, publication of the essay was approved by the Army War College's commandant, Major General David Hantoon, Lovelace said. He said he and Hantoon expected the study to be controversial, but added, quote, he considers it to be under the umbrella of academic freedom, unquote. Larry DeRita, the top Pentagon spokesman, said he had not read the record study. He added, quote, if the conclusion is that we need to be scaling back in the global war on terrorism, it's not likely to be on my reading list anytime soon, unquote. Many of Record's arguments, such as the contention that Saddam Hussein's Iraq was deterred and did not present a threat, have been made before by critics of the administration. Iraq, he concludes, quote, was a war of choice distraction from the war of necessity against al-Qaeda. But it is unusual to have such views published by the War College, the Army's premier academic institution. In addition, the essay goes further than many critics in examining the Bush administration's handling of the war on terrorism. Record's core criticism is that the administration is biting off more than it can chew. He likens the scale of U.S. ambitions in the war on terrorism to Hitler's overreach in World War II. Quote, a cardinal rule of strategy is to keep your enemies to a manageable number, he writes. The Germans were defeated in two world wars because their strategic ends outran their available means. And again, note the comparison here by Jeffrey Record. And I am, again, convinced that there is, in fact, a struggle between sincerely patriotic elements of the American power structure and the underground Reich-connected elements, the point element of which is the Bush administration, that quite literally have in mind the destruction, physical and or economic, and or subjugation, physical or economic, of the United States. And I mean that quite literally. Wesley Clark, I believe, represents not only somebody who does not want to see the United States destroyed, but is, in effect, a mouthpiece and a candidate for that element of the American power structure that is sincerely patriotic and does not want to see the United States dismembered and destroyed. And again, I am absolutely convinced that the Bush administration and its allies, both in the underground Reich and the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood and its allies, are looking to the annihilation of the United States and their incorporation in turn into a world corporate state, a global corporate state. The San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, December 23rd of the year 2003, had some comments by General Wesley Clark. Clark, Bush policy on Iraq led to latest terror alert. It's by Edward Wyatt of the New York Times. It reads in part, Democratic presidential candidate Wesley Clark on Monday blamed bad leadership by President Bush for the nation's heightened terrorism alert status, saying it was a strategic mistake, unquote, to shift resources to Iraq from the hunt for Osama bin Laden in Pakistan and Afghanistan. A wise leadership would not have put us into Iraq at this time, Clark told reporters after serving hot meals at Manna House, a nonprofit agency. Instead, we'd have concentrated on Osama bin Laden. This past week, although I'm not going to dwell on it, former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill has been very vocal in his criticisms not only of the Bush policies vis-a-vis Iraq, but also the Bush mania for cutting taxes. And those two elements, I think, are quite literally represent a dire threat to American security and to the survival of this country, both economically and politically. Iraq is bleeding the United States economically and militarily, served as a huge, huge diplomatic black eye for this country, the dimensions of which couldn't be exaggerated, and a wonderful recruiting tool for al-Qaeda as well. Paul O'Neill was the Treasury Secretary who authorized the Customs Department raids that resulted in the Operation Green Quest of March 20th of 2002. Those raids uncovered the Muslim Brotherhood links to al-Qaeda, the main funding sources for al-Qaeda and Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and in behind those were the al-Taqwa Muslim Brotherhood networks with links through people like Youssef Nada and Ahmed Huber going back to the Third Reich, and also with links running in the direction of the Bush administration, the Republican, the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, and people like Karl Rove and Grover Norquist, the Republican point men for tax cutting, and people like Talat Atman, close associate of George Bush. With the Operation Green Quest raids, we see the intersection between the Muslim Brotherhood, the Third Reich, and the GOP and the Bush administration, and I believe that Paul O'Neill's opposition to the tax cuts and his authorization of the Operation Green Quest raids led to his dismissal. And he has recently been very outspoken in his criticism of the Bush administration. In For the Record program number 439, I noted, as well as For the Record 435, I noted that apparently people from the Altaqua network, including Youssef Nada, had continued to attempt to mobilize their considerable international assets, and that recently Youssef Nada had gone to Liechtenstein. The U.S. is now moving against some of the Altaqua networks in Liechtenstein. San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, December 23rd of 2003, has the following story, Dateline Washington, from the Chronicle News Services, growing list of terror finance suspects. The Bush administration acted Monday to financially paralyze two foreign entities and an individual believed to be providing money for Al-Qaeda's terror network. The Treasury Department added to its list of suspected terrorist financiers Vazir, a nonprofit organization in Travnik, Bosnia, a key representative of the group, Safed Durguti, and Hochberg AG, a company located in Vaduz, Liechtenstein. The department's designation freezes any of the three's financial assets in this country. Juan Zarate, the Treasury Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Terrorist Financing and Financial Crimes, said that Vazir was picking up where the closed Bosnia branch of Al Haramain, a Saudi-based charity, had left off. That branch of Al Haramain last year was put on the U.S. list of terrorist financiers, which is aimed at severing the group from the U.S. banking system. Hochberg AG sprang up as the successor organization to Bank Altaqua, or to BA Taqwa, for Commerce and Real Estate Company Limited, which the United States also put on its list of terrorist financiers last year, Treasury said. We're going to take a look at some more of the Altaqua assets and Nada management assets in Liechtenstein. We're going to review a book called, a passage from a book that we used in For the Record 425. The book is titled Terrorist Hunter. It was authored by a woman who had published under the pseudonym Anonymous. It's actually a woman named Rita Katz. She's now come forward because she's being sued by some of the Saudi elements that are implicated in her work. Rita Katz is an Iraqi Jew who speaks fluent Arabic and had infiltrated some of the Islamist networks in the United States, and had her investigations assisted in the Operation Green Quest raids. She originally published under the pseudonym Anonymous because she has a husband and four children, but now that her anonymity has been broken, she has come forward and was actually interviewed on 60 Minutes. Of the Liechtenstein genesis of what eventually became Bank Altaqua, that was formally incorporated in 1988, we read, in 1976, Hisham al-Talib, Muhammad M. Shama and Jamal Barzinji, the founders of the SAR network, founded a bank in the small kingdom of Liechtenstein in the city of Vaduz. By the way, Jamal Barzinji was a member of the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist. Beginning again, in 1976, Hisham al-Talib, Muhammad M. Shama, and Jamal Barzinji, the founders of the SAR network, founded a bank in the small kingdom of Liechtenstein in the city of Vaduz. They named it Nada International after its director, Youssef M. Nada. Nada, an Egyptian-born naturalized Italian citizen in his 70s, a good friend of Iraq's Saddam Hussein, was one of the most prominent leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was imprisoned in Egypt for his involvement in an attempt to assassinate Gamal Abdel Nasser, the first Egyptian president. After he was set free, he left for Europe, where he established the Muslim Brotherhood's major financial organizations and those of Al-Qaeda. Nada also became director of two banks founded in the Bahamas, Bank Altaqua, or Fear of Allah, and Akita Bank Private. On November 7, 2001, President Bush designated Bank Altaqua, its key executives, and its closely affiliated businesses as financial supporters of Al-Qaeda and called to freeze Altaqua's assets. Skipping down. As the Treasury described them, Altaqua and Akita were shell companies and not functional banking institutions, unquote. Altaqua, a network of companies in Switzerland, Liechtenstein, the Bahamas, and Italy, provided investment advice and cash transfer mechanisms for various radical Islamic groups. Alpaca controlled at a certain point $220 million in assets. It had thousands of client investments in accordance with the Sharia Islamic law, which forbids charging interest. Among its largest clients were Youssef al-Qaradawi, his wife and his children, and many other members of his family. Other clients of Al-Taqwa included several members of the bin Laden family, including brothers and sisters of Usama. As Aqida Bank's director, Nada rather amazingly employed one Suleiman Abdul Aziz al-Raji, one of the Saudi brothers behind the SAR network. So al-Raji, with his legendary riches, worked for Nada. Yet Nada worked for Barzinji and al-Talib, who in turn worked for al-Raji's charity, the SAR Foundation. Are you good and confused? That was the general idea. And the al-Raji is among the most powerful families of Saudi Arabia. What we're going to take a look at next is not only some of the Liechtenstein connections of the Al-Taqwa network, and Al-Taqwa, as we've seen, is far more than just an Islamic fundamentalist organization. It is the financial network of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is actually an Islamic fascist organization with ties going back to the fascist powers of Europe in World War II. And as we looked at in For the Record 377 and 378, analyzing information from Kevin Coogan's analysis of the Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg book by the von Donanyis, the connections of Bank Al-Taqwa go way beyond anything in the Muslim world. They go to elements associated with the Berlusconi government in Italy, Berlusconi, a former member of the P2. They overlap the milieu of the Alleanza Nazionale, the latest incarnation of the Italian Fascist Party, the Banco del Gottardo, a Swiss bank that it was at one point the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano. And Per Felici Barchi, a director of the Banco del Gottardo and the lawyer for Youssef Nada, also is the fellow who handles the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi. So there's much more going on here than just Islamic fundamentalism. And again, my analysis of Al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood as an Earth Island outgrowth of the underground Reich. It has strong connections to the milieu of the royal family of Liechtenstein. And also, as we're going to see, apparently Ali Galeb Hemat and Youssef Nada spent time in the United States in the late 70s and early 80s. I would speculate that was probably in connection with the Muslim Brotherhood's coordination with elements of U.S. intelligence in helping to put together the Mujahideen effort in Afghanistan against the Soviets. And Youssef Nada and Ali Galeb Hemat actually had six kids in the United States. The following is from Forward of October 17th of 2003. This is by Mark Perlman of the Forward staff. It's headlined, Terror Fund Trail Leads to Alpine Kingdom. It reads in part, a man charged last week on immigration infractions and suspected by prosecutors of financial links to terrorism is seen by government investigators as a possible key to unraveling an alleged terrorism financing network spanning from Virginia to the secretive kingdom of Liechtenstein. Solomon Beheri, a native of Egypt, was convicted in a federal court in Virginia on charges of lying on his citizenship application. It's the first conviction to be handed down in a major terrorism investigation involving a cluster of Islamic charities and companies in Virginia. These were the companies targeted by Operation Green Quest and authorized by former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. Continuing and skipping down. Sources close to the investigation said prosecutors asked for the unusual sentencing because they think Beheri, who was held as a material witness before his trial, has deep knowledge of the so-called SAR network. The network, a group of Muslim charities and companies based in Virginia, is believed to have ties in two European tax havens, Switzerland and Liechtenstein. In an affidavit filed in support of Beheri's detention, Special Agent David Kane accused him of possibly funneling $3.7 million from the Virginia charities to terrorists through his New Jersey-based real estate company, BMI. Kane also alleged that he had business and personal relationships with Hamas leader Musa Abu Marzouk, suspected Al-Qaeda and Hamas backer Yassin Qadi, and Sami Al-Arian, a Florida University professor indicted for his alleged leadership position in Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Skipping down, The prosecution also alleged that Biheri is linked to a secretive financial network in Switzerland and Liechtenstein called Al-Taqwa, which American and European investigators say is a financial backer of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood, often depicted as the ideological parent of most radical Islamic groups, recently has come under government scrutiny for its possible direct role in supporting terrorism, most prominently because of Al-Taqwa. The Bush administration and the United Nations have designated the Al-Taqwa network and its main officials, two self-avowed Muslim brothers and an admitted Nazi sympathizer, as supporters of Al-Qaeda. As a result, their assets have been frozen, and they are the focus of a Swiss investigation. Skipping down. At the Biheri detention hearing last month, prosecutor Stephen Ward described Biheri as the Muslim Brotherhood's, quote, financial toehold in the United States. The prosecution said it had established links between Biheri and the two principals of Al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada and Galeb Himat. According to testimony from Special Agent Kane of the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the addresses of Nada and Himat were found in Biheri's laptop computer. Kane told the court that there were other indications, unquote, of connections between Al-Taqwa and Biheri's company BMI, including financial transactions, skipping down. One company in the Al-Taqwa galaxy that was designated by the United States and the UN as a terrorist-related entity is a Liechtenstein entity called ASOT Trust. Its director, Martin Wachter, told The Forward this year that ASOT Trust operates merely as a registry for businesses and is not involved in the operation of any company. He added that the American government had wrongly designated ASOT Trust as a terrorist-related entity because it had once represented Al-Taqwa in a small real estate deal in Switzerland. Still, copies of business registration documents on file with authorities in Liechtenstein show that ASOT Trust has been intimately involved with the Al-Taqwa network during the last 30 years, registering changes in company names, personnel, and financial structure, which may explain why ASOT Trust landed on the American and UN terrorist lists. The records also shed light on the involvement of one member of the royal family of Liechtenstein in ASOT Trust. According to the documents, deceased Prince Emmanuel von und zu Liechtenstein became a board member of ASOT Trust in May 1970 and stayed until November of 1990 when he was replaced by Wachter, the Trust's current director. Skipping down. There also appears to be some links between ASOT Trust and a bank owned by the Liechtenstein royal family. Several ASOT Trust documents feature on their letterheads, Bank in Liechtenstein AG beneath ASOT Trust. The Royal Family Bank has changed its name and is now called LGT Bank. Parenthetic, I would say, can you say Bormann? Continuing, a telephone and an email query to the bank spokesman Hans Martin Ueringer went unreturned. Biheri's wife told federal agents in May 2002 that her husband had left the United States in mid-2002 to work for the Liechtenstein Bank in Switzerland, according to the sworn testimony of Special Agent Kane. Biheri himself told Kane that his job at the bank consisted of investment banking with high-net-worth clients and included significant travel between Egypt and Saudi Arabia, according to the affidavit. Skipping down. Al-Taqwa, speaking of the SAR network that was the focal point of the Operation Green Quest raids authorized by Paul O'Neill, Al-Taqwa also appears to have some links to the SAR network. Two operatives from the SAR-related companies and charities, Jamal Barzinji and Hisham Al-Talib, were board members of one of the network's companies in Liechtenstein during the mid-1970s, according to incorporation records. Skipping down. There are also indications that both Nada and Himat, the Al-Taqwa principals, who today live in an Italian enclave bordering Switzerland and have acquired Italian citizenship, spent time in the United States in the late 1970s and early 1980s. According to a translated copy of a 1996 Italian intelligence report, they each had three children born in the United States, five of them born in Silver Spring, Maryland, between 1979 and 1984. According to the Kane affidavit, Biheri also had relations with a prominent Egyptian religious leader from the Muslim Brotherhood called Sheikh Youssef Qaradawi. We've spoken about Kara Dawi in a number of programs, including, for the record, program 439, and we came back, including FTR 439. The concluding element that I'm going to talk about in this program concerns the inroads that the Muslim Brotherhood has made within the Islamic community in the United States, both emigres from various Muslim countries and African-American Muslims as well. And we're going to conclude with what I believe is a strategic goal of the Underground Reich and its Muslim Brotherhood extension, that coming from Sun Tzu. Wall Street Journal of Tuesday, December 23rd of 2003 discussed Muslim Brotherhood influence in the U.S., an article called A Student Journeys into a Secret Circle of Extremism. It's authored by Paul M. Barrett and reads in part, "One afternoon, Mustafa Sayed, a junior at the University of Tennessee, was summoned by a friend to a nearby empty campus cafeteria. The two settled themselves in a quiet corner, and Mr. Sayed's friend invited him to join the Muslim Brotherhood. Everything I had learned pointed to the Muslim Brotherhood being an awesome thing, the elite movement," says Mr. Sayed of his initiation in 1994. "I cannot tell you the feeling that I felt. Awesome power," unquote. On that day in Knoxville, Mr. Sayed entered a secretive community that was slowly building a roster of young men committed to spreading fundamentalist Islam in the U.S. A movement launched 75 years ago in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood has inspired terrorist acts as well as social reform throughout the Middle East and has chapters in some European nations. Until recently, law enforcement officials saw little evidence that the organization was active inside the U.S. Once inside this world, Mr. Sayed railed against Jews in Israel during Friday services. He attended meetings in hotels in Toledo and Chicago where radical sheikhs glorified jihad. He raised money for Muslims in Bosnia and Chechnya, some of which he later learned was funneled to Mujahideen fighters. And among the people that he interfaced with in the United States, in December 1995, skipping ahead, Mr. Sayed attended another Muslim Arab Youth Association conference at a hotel in Toledo, Ohio. Sheikh Kara Dawi, the cleric affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Taqwa, gave a speech later transcribed and translated by the Investigative Project, a terrorism research group based in Washington. It goes on to describe this speech. And in addition to emigres from Muslim countries, as we looked at in For the Record 439, the Muslim Brotherhood and specifically people associated with Al-Taqwa, such as Sheikh Al-Kara Dawi and Al-Amudi and Abdurrahman Al-Amudi, are also forming liaisons with African-American Muslims as well. The template that I suspect is being employed here by the Underground Reich and those elements who often, I suspect, are completely not aware of how they're being used, comes from Sun Tzu's Art of War, written in 1200 BC. Consider Sun Tzu and the application of his principles to the contemporary situation. "There is no art higher than that of destroying the enemy's resistance without a fight on the battlefield. The direct tactic of war is necessary only on the battlefield, but only the indirect tactic can lead to a real and lasting victory. Subvert anything of value in the enemy's country. Implicate the emissaries of the major powers in criminal undertakings. Undermine their position, and destroy their reputation in other ways as well, and expose them to the public ridicule of their fellow citizens. Do not shun the aid of even the lowest and most despicable people. Disrupt the work of their government with every means you can. Spread disunity and dispute among the citizens of the enemy's country. Turn the young against the old. Use every means to destroy their arms, their supplies, and the discipline of the enemy's forces. Debase old traditions and accepted gods. Be generous with promises and rewards to purchase intelligence and accomplices. Send out your secret agents in all directions. Do not skimp with money or with promises, for they yield a high return," unquote. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 442, the continuation of World War II, being recorded on January 18th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.